Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name's Charlie Wallace.
My name's Adam Gobeski, and we have with us four guests. We have Dan Hess.
Glad to be here.
Doug Gobeski.
Hello!
Kevin Bredevoog.
Hello there.
Paul Wilcox.
Great to be back.
And exciting special guest, Cara Hulse.
Hi, everyone.
And we're here to talk about the 14th episode of our sci-fi shuffle. This time we are talking about the 1997 movie Event Horizon, which is a movie that Charlie called an audible on last time, as you may recall, and basically said, I'm the executive producer and I decree that Cara's choice goes in now.
Yeah, it's called executive privilege.
Good thing it only applies to this podcast. So, yeah, Cara, why did you want to watch this movie for Sci-Fi Shuffle?
I love horror. Halloween's coming up, and that's why I was like, oh, it'd be fun to talk about.
Yeah, you made me watch it years ago.
Yes.
This is not the first time.
If you're going to be in this relationship with me, you need to sit down and watch this.
You need to watch Event Horizon if this is going to work out.
I think it was pretty early on in our dating where did we have a Sam Neill night?
It was a Sam Neill night. We watched that and Jurassic Park. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we intended to watch something else too. And we're like, that's
too,
a lot of
too
movies.
Much.
The Merlin miniseries.
Oh, yeah, we ended up doing that. Yes. That's but right. That was later on.
That's more Sam Neill than any man can handle. So, Event Horizon, the 1997 film directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, probably better known for helming a bunch of the Resident Evil movies. He also directed Mortal Kombat, the original. He's Paul W.S. Anderson because there's another director named Paul Thomas Anderson. And they both, as far as I can tell, registered with different guilds as Paul Anderson. So Paul W.S. Anderson was Paul Anderson in the Directors Guild, and Paul Thomas Anderson was Paul Anderson in the Writers Guild. So I think they both sort of just ended up including middle name / initials to avoid confusion, because Paul Thomas Anderson makes, I think it's safe to say, fairly different films from Paul W.S. Anderson.
I do notice he was credited as Paul Anderson at the end of this movie.
Yes. So I heard that this basically didn't become a thing until like later, 97, 98, something like that.
Also, make sure you don't confuse Paul W.S. Anderson with Wes Anderson, who makes, yet again, entirely different movies from either of them.
That is a very fair point. Yes. Paul Wes Anderson. So yeah, Event Horizon is basically haunted house in space, I guess might be the best way to put it.
It's a really odd movie.
Event Horizon is about a spaceship called the Event Horizon, which, side note, seems like a really strange name for a spaceship, but it is secretly outfitted with a prototype wormhole drive, basically, although they call it something else. It launches in 2040. The first time they use the drive, it completely disappears. And then 7 years later, it shows up again near Neptune. So a rescue crew is sent out to find out what happened and if anyone's still alive. So let's just go around the metaphorical room and ask if people had watched this before. I think I had seen maybe bits and pieces. I don't know if it was on TV or maybe my dad was watching it at one point and I was just kind of wandering in and out, but I don't think I'd actually sat down and watched the whole thing until last night. Like, there were moments and stuff that seemed kind of familiar, but there were definitely moments that I didn't remember that I feel like I should have, so that's why I don't think I'd actually seen the whole thing before.
I had never watched it before. This was the first time.
Same. I had never so much as heard of this prior to watching it today.
I'm excited to hear what people think.
There you go. I think this one's probably my third or fourth time watching it, because like Adam, I'm sure dad taped it off of broadcast television. So it's, TV edit. But I know for sure that I've seen it on streaming since then and then rented it again today.
I had never seen it before at all, but it was definitely on my list of potential sci-fi shuffle picks, so I was happy, Cara, that you picked this for me.
All right.
So you don't have to waste your pick? Is that what you're saying?
You got half the crowd is a bunch of newbies.
It gets me more picks. More picks in my wheelhouse.
Paul needs his picks.
Like, free.
All right. Well, this is the fourth time I've seen it. gets better every time.
Yeah. What were the first two times? Just because?
Yeah, just because.
Is this the movie you watched with your dad, maybe?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I watched so many bad movies with him, and he introduced me to a lot of movies a lot younger than I probably should have.
And I've seen this twice, both times with Kara. So do people generally like horror movies? That's an interesting place to start.
Yes, I do.
I'm split on horror movies. I like some, I don't like some, and I know that's a very, very general statement to make about anything, but like, I don't seek them out, I'll say that, but I find slashers to usually be kind of boring to me, but like psychological thrillers, if done really well, freak me out.
I remember I went over to your house, and not only we watched Donnie Darko, but we also watched Ed Gein.
Oh, yeah, no. I do remember that.
It might not have been the same night, but...
No, it probably wouldn't have been. Like, yeah, we watched Ed Gein. I haven't thought about that movie in ages.
Cool.
I'm probably kind of like Dan. I generally don't like horror movies. Like, if Brianne suggests let's watch a horror movie, I'm usually pretty tepid, I guess. But I found that I have this weird exception if it's sci-fi or like cosmic horror. I think it might just be because, like, for whatever reason, it's easier for my brain to deal with monsters and things like that being evil than like people being evil.
So I think I'm in a similar boat as you, but like it's not just monsters, but any like physical bad guy, I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. And often it, you know, they devolve into cliches and things that, I don't know, just kind of bores me. But like, when you get into really psychological or weird ghost type things with like whether it's The Shining or The Ring or things like that, like something you can't defend yourself against, like those ones can freak me out a little. Like if Michael Myers comes at me, I feel like I could, you know, at least swing a baseball bat at him or something. But if that weird ghost girl from The Ring crawls out of my TV, I am going to lose my mind.
Yeah, I would say that I don't really seek them out, except that now that I'm married to Kara, I'd watch more than my fair share. Although you do also save a lot for when that I'm not around, too.
Yes, I do.
So, Kara, are you a horror movie aficionado?
I am. I like horror.
Oh, you and my wife should have viewing parties then.
Yeah, we should.
Are you subscribed to Fangoria?
No.
You have a Shudder account?
I did have a Shudder account. Not anymore, though, because we have way too many streaming services at this point.
Absolutely fair, yes.
Yeah.
You just sign up for October like everyone else.
Yeah. And then... But yeah, no, I like it. And I mean, I even have like comfort horror movies that I watch like often.
Like comfort horror. Like
there would just movies. Be like ones that be in the background that I'm like, oh yeah, this is like, I like this movie. And
can you provide an example or two?
It feels good when the Saw is playing in the background.
Right.
Well, I would probably do like a Paranormal Activity or like a Hell House LLC or something like that. And I've watched those way too many times.
Where it's like, that's the worst for me. If I like half paid attention to a horror movie, like that would definitely freak me out. I have to be like watching the screen.
To make sure nothing crawls out.
Yes.
So as a horror movie fan, somebody who takes comfort in watching some of them, like what draws you to them?
A little bit of the adrenaline. And then after a while, it's just like you don't get that as much. And it's just like, oh, this is just a movie that you're trying to chase that high again, I guess. I don't know.
The drug. Got it.
Yeah.
Still chasing that, you know, like first time watching Hereditary or
whatever. Oh, my God. That was... That in the theater when people like notice the
yeah.
But no, I think they're just fun.
I don't think we heard from everyone else if they what their feelings on horror movies are. So let's take one quick step back and just make sure everyone is accounted for. We don't want to turn out someone was left behind in a horror movie conversation.
I'm definitely not to the level where I would be considered a horror movie fan, But I think I'm a little bit closer than, say, Adam is, and I assume by extension, Dan, since they sounded like they were pretty similar. So, like, I'm not looking for, like, the straight up stuff. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen Chucky, Nightmare on Elm Street, Saw.
You didn't see Saw?
Halloween, any of that stuff. I saw a little bit of Saw 2. Mm. That was about it.
Saw 2.
Like I saw the reverse. Like I saw the reverse bear trap. I think that was Saw 2. And the jumping into the swimming pool full of needles. But that was, you know, there's a few others. Wait, but,
wasn't
you know,
that
whatever.
Saw 3, the needle pool?
You know, maybe, I don't, maybe it was like a Saw marathon that
it
I was walking
the,
in
it was
and out
the
of.
Girl from Becker. Who was in the pool?
That's
why
you know.
Oh my god! Wow. That nice. Said, like, unlike Adam, you know, I have like Reanimator. Very much enjoyed that. A huge gore fest. That movie. You know, some stuff where it's like a little bit of a lighter fare, but still kind of horror, like Mandy. That's about my horror movie experience.
I wouldn't say I actively seek them out, but I don't avoid them. Back when I was in like high school and I had spare time on my hands, me and my friends would go to like, you know, see them in the theaters, and that was kind of fun. And we would rent like Santa's Sleigh, spelled S-L-E-I-G-H, like the kind of schlocky, barely even intended as horror, more just watch something ridiculous and make fun of it style movies. But lately, no, I don't really. I don't seek out the horror.
Yeah, I had a girlfriend in college who was huge into horror movies, and like, and she was actually a longtime Fangoria subscriber. So I think I watched a lot of horror movies in a small window there. But yeah, I don't avoid them, but I don't seek them out. Like that's where I fall on the horror movie spectrum.
Well, it sought you out this time.
This one did, but honestly, this one has been on my movies to watch list for ages because like it kind of has a cult following and I've heard lots of good things about it. So when Adam texted me and was like, hey, we're doing Event Horizon, I was like, oh, I'll finally force myself to watch it. Like I've been wanting to see that movie for years.
Yeah, this is probably one of like the archetypes maybe of the true cult movie. Like a lot of times anything sort of science fiction or fantasy gets described as cult in some circles. You know, even like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings at various points, I think have been described as cult. But I think this really is a cult film. This is not a film that did very well at the time. It does not say that it was like a huge bomb. It just, I think, underperformed relative to what they were hoping. But it's one of those movies that has sort of found an audience as time has gone on. And it's a movie that people still talk about in a way that they're not talking about, let's say, Soldier from the same director next in the following year. That's the one with Kurt Russell that no one has seen or remembers.
Yeah, I read on the internet, and by that I mean Wikipedia, that after making less in the box office than its budget, it did so well on DVD afterward that the studio actually reached out to Paul Anderson to have him do like a director's cut. Because apparently it was originally longer and they cut a bunch out and rushed it to theaters.
25 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can talk about that later after we talk about the movie. But like, I definitely, after reading that, thought to myself, oh man, I want to see the director's cut. Like, I'll bet you that answers some of the questions I had. You know?
Yeah, I just follow up on Dan. The reason there's not a director's cut is apparently they kind of looked into it and discovered that the majority of the cut footage had been destroyed because back in 1997, you know, director's cuts weren't really a thing and there was no pressing need for them to keep it.
Yeah, in this day and age, that shocks me when I read something or hear something like that, that like, oh yeah, all that extra footage was destroyed. Was like, did you like need that extra, you know, 4 ounces of weight on that shelf, or like, why did you throw that away?
It's business, man. I don't know. But that's probably a separate discussion to go down. Yeah.
Now let's talk about film preservation, guys. You've got a few hours, right?
So one of the things I really enjoyed about this movie is that we apparently established a moon colony in 2015.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're way behind the curve, man.
But even in 1997, I'm like, that seems optimistic.
No, I disagree. Like, when you look at what President George W. Bush had proposed with, like, the Artemis program, it seems reasonable. It's just that in this timeline that we're living in, we've got huge delays compared to what the plan was supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm with Adam. I had the same exact thought when I saw it, and I was like, that seems like an odd year to choose, given this was made in 1997.
Seems ambitious.
Yes, it seemed very ambitious.
They had an international space station. The next step is a moon base.
Well, it's... aren't we lucky that we're not in that timeline, though? We should be counting our blessings.
Yeah.
That's only a problem for people like 20 years from now, okay?
Exactly.
Well, that's true. We're living in utopia right now before we find the portal to hell.
I don't know. That timeline, though, maybe had there been no 9/11 and war in Afghanistan, maybe we would have done that instead. So.
That was subtext like that I did not pick up on in the film.
Were people thinking this was going to be a little bit more sci-fi, too? I went back and watched, like, the first trailer for it, and it looked like it was going to be so much more sci-fi instead of, like, just going horror.
My impression watching it again was, wow, this is extremely sci-fi.
Hmm.
We got miniature shots, even. You know, we got crazy curved doorways and walls and such. The slanted yellow-black caution, you know, tape, placed on things.
Like, it could definitely be a lot less sci-fi, right?
Yeah.
They could go to, like, Mars or something and find a structure there that they don't understand, and that's the haunted house equivalent, right? Whereas this one, we have, like, the ship and, like, the ostensible reason why all the scary horror things are happening, sort of. Well, obviously, well, I think we'll talk about that.
Yeah, to Kara's point, I definitely, I didn't go back and watch the trailer, but I do very distinctly recall that I always thought this was a strict sci-fi movie, and it wasn't until years later when I remember hearing people talk about how good it was that I learned that it was like a horror movie and not actually about event horizons and black holes. Like, I had right. No idea. I thought it was a straight up like spaceship Star Trek sci-fi movie.
But maybe that's kind of what I was getting at with my talk about like horror stuff, is like, if it can be pigeonholed as something that's not horror, I think I'm more inclined to watch it.
Mm.
So, for instance, the first Alien movie is actually pretty freaking scary,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But I don't have a problem watching that because I think I put it as like a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, I would agree like, with you, definitely.
In like a way that I, you know, am not happy watching something like Texas Chainsaw, maybe. Because that's not a sci-fi context. And so I'm... Maybe it's harder for me to compartmentalize it because of that. I don't know. Or as my wife once said after she caught me watching some episode of Doctor Who, she was like, "You told me you don't like horror, but you'll watch this?" I was like, "What's wrong with this?" She's like, "This is scary." Maybe it was the Are You My Mummy episode. Anyway, getting off track.
But that's what this movie does really well. Probably my favorite part of it is it just melds both genres really well. So you can just see into it what you want to. Like, I was watching a lot more for the horror this time and was like, oh, like, so it has the sci-fi element, but the doors have like spikes in them. Like, I was half expecting somebody to get cut in half by one of those doors.
Yeah.
Like, just the whole design of the ship and everything's green and
someone to get impaled on one of those big spikes in the drive room and that never right. happened.
Yeah, I agree. I thought for sure.
Maybe on the director's cut there was a
it could happen. Be, yeah.
10 more cast members.
We need you to cut around the following people.
And they had the perfect opportunity when the one lady at the end
fell into the room.
Like, she should have landed on a spike.
Missed opportunity.
Instead, she landed and had a very Family Guy-esque, like, mangled situation.
Yeah, like when she landed, like, they showed like her body and I was like, oh, she's breathing. She survived. And then like the next scene, like, nope, she's dead. Not that kind of movie, Adam. Sorry. Well, for a half second, it seemed like it might because like the kid who goes into like the airlock, right? Like he survives. So I was like, oh, okay, maybe people will make it out of this. Okay. Cause you know, I'm obviously a very naive viewer and I just want the best for everyone.
Yeah, and then at the very end, Kara pointed out too to me that she was like, well, we don't know if that guy, like, what's going to happen with that guy? And I'm like, he's fine. They said he was fine. And then what did you say?
He might be possessed or something.
I like, forgot. It's like, yeah, I guess he could be possessed.
Yeah. He's seen things.
Unleashing the darkness within onto the entire world, like, once he returns to Earth.
What's he going to do about it? Pine for the gravity drive? He's no scientist. He's not getting back to hell.
Poor guy.
I think I want to come back to that a bit later.
Okay. Yeah. There's so many fun lines in this, though, too. At, towards the beginning, when they're like talking about like how it's made and everything, and he's like, oh, you made a black hole, the most destructive force in the universe, and you just created one? He was like, absolutely yes. You know, just like, just the delivery on that. Samuel is great.
I found myself slightly distracted, though, and this, I think, was purely just a me thing. Well, a me and Brianne thing, because she watched it with me, because she also hadn't seen it and was curious. But one of the main characters is played by Sean Pertwee. He's the pilot, but he's also the son of John Pertwee, who played the third Doctor in Doctor Who. And he looks a lot like his dad, and I spent a lot of time just thinking about that instead of whatever was happening in the movie.
I saw that name and was like, oh, that's just a coincidence, but... And also Lucius Malfoy showing up to
me. Yeah.
I was like, where have I seen him? I'm imagining him with a ponytail. What?
Oh, was that Jason Isaacs?
Yep.
Yes.
I think you mean Star Trek Discovery's Jason Isaacs.
Oh,
This is a stacked cast. Like, as far as like genre actors go, like, you've got those two guys. You've got Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Neill, obviously. I mean, it's a good cast.
Oh, and like going back to the lines too, like, some great F-bombs dropped in this movie. Very effective use of them.
And some early nipple early on, letting you know, okay, yeah, this is our movie. This is an R movie. Not this is our
this
movie.
This is our movie.
The first sight of a nipple, you're like, yeah, this is our movie.
Yeah, I'm like Brian Hackett. I just know where all nipples are in movies. That's your Wings reference, Paul, for you.
Talking about Wings, talking about Becker. Yeah. It's Paul's podcast.
We were overdue for both of those references.
So another super sci-fi aspect of this movie, as far as like, you know, things that are really stretching the limits here. Did anybody else notice that they were smoking cigarettes on the ship?
Yeah. I love when he offers him the
And
he wasn't like, wait, you can't smoke that in here.
Is it bad that my thought was, oh, this is clearly like a dated film because they should really all be vaping?
That's the future.
Now you gotta get further into the future when we realize that vaping is worse for you.
And they go back to cigarettes.
They go back to cigarettes.
they made a clean cigarette by the 2030s or whatever, I'm sure.
No, they find a cure for cigarette induced lung cancer and emphysema, but not vaping lung.
Yeah, you know, it's got vitamins in it and stuff, I'm sure.
No, the vitamins is what kills you. That's what vape lung does.
I do find it interesting in movies like this, you know, with all the crazy wacky stuff going on, you know, it's in the future, they're traveling through singularities and black holes and all this kind of stuff. And the two moments where I was actually like, I don't buy this, was smoking on the ship and when they wait until they wake up from stasis to like introduce each other to the new guy. I'm like, wait a minute. They didn't do that like before they left. Like I can see the top secret briefing maybe waiting, but like, you know, nobody was like, hey, I'm Dr. Weir or whatever. Like, who are you?
Now that you've been in class for 4 weeks, let's go around and introduce ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know we just met, but how about we all sleep together in the same room for several months straight?
Right? Oh, Boy Scouts.
Garden, you also mentioned, like, why are they standing up inside those pods? And, like, when they open them up, they just fall forward.
It's like, you'd think there'd be a better way to do that.
Yeah. Put down a mattress. And
they didn't have a better way to drain the liquid either.
It just all splashes out.
Look, they ran the numbers. This was the cheapest way to keep people in stasis.
Look, we paid for the gravity plating. We're gonna use
it. We're gonna use it.
You just have a floor drain.
That sounds like an engineer just going, you know, we could just put a drain in the floor.
what if we just open it up and just splash it all out at once? Yeah, great idea.
They're going to be way out in space when they realize that's how this works. So
we tried a lie flat design, but there weren't enough nightmares upon me.
I also loved Lawrence Fishburne's chair.
Oh my God. Right.
Hanging from the ceiling.
And then the one time where he was going to leave, but he had to slowly turn it first.
Like everybody else got up out of their seat, and like he just turned it 180 degrees.
Look, the man knows what he likes.
Yeah, the whole set there, like that bridge was awesome. Like I was like, I want this like in my house, you know, like mm-hmm. a recreation of this. Is like my gritty sci-fi ship dream.
There was a lot of good like practical effects and stuff too, but like the CGI was really taking me out of it a little bit too, though.
Yeah, it was like hello 1997.
Exactly. Yeah. And we actually the day before we watched Aliens. It was Charlie's first time for seeing it.
Did you watch the theatrical or the director's cut? Out of curiosity.
Theatrical.
Okay. So, sorry.
No.
Charlie didn't know.
I didn't know when he asked me.
I figured I would ask the person who did.
It looked good. You know, there's so much practical. And watching this one, it's like, oh, yeah, there's...
Yeah, I made 11 years later trying to use CG. But all the practical stuff they did was actually great. So mm-hmm. That's why it stood out so well.
Yeah, but props to them for pushing the technology, right? Like,
yeah, somebody had to. And I think you notice that the whole time, but particularly when that one scene where it changes from CGI, everything floating around to suddenly real water and things like that.
I mean, it's a cool idea. Interacting with like the CGI blobs and stuff. Like even while I'm like, oh, obviously that's CG coolant or whatever that he's pushing aside in the engine room. Like I'm still like, oh, I still like it.
So, I mean, was anyone kind of like freaked out by this movie at all? Like, did any parts stick out to you?
There were definitely moments where I don't want to say that I was freaked out so much as maybe confused.
Yeah.
But for moments that I think like in retrospect was like, oh, okay, that was supposed to be like a weird, freaky thing, not a continuity error that happened. So like when Peter's the med tech, she like sees like the tent in the medical room and like a hand pushing out. Like there was a part of me that was like, no one's looked at this tent thing yet under it to figure out what's going on. Like I was really confused by that until I was like, oh, this is supposed to be one of the visions or whatever that's happening. Okay. I will say the visions of hell that they like flip through like really fast towards the end when I guess Beast Weir or whatever is like possessing Lawrence Fishburne's character, Miller. And he sees like all these visions of like his crew being tortured and stuff. Like, even though that goes by real fast, so you can't really focus on it. Like, I thought that was pretty freaky intense. Like, I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah. When they were looking through the logs too, and the old crew, and like that part was when I first saw this movie, that made me feel gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. That felt to me like some of the most like true horror parts of the movie. In terms of like, oh, okay, this would be more at home in like just any kind of freaky, gory horror movie. It felt less sci-fi to me once it is that more kind of human horror, mm-hmm. I guess.
But then like the best line right after that, we're leaving.
I don't think any of the horror particularly like freaked me out so much, but I think the one part that stood out where like I was, it definitely felt really tense and I was on the edge of my seat after Sam Neill was possessed and like blew the window out and everything was getting sucked out. And Lawrence Fishburne put like the crowbar sword I don't know where he found that thing, but like the crowbar sword thing in the door, and he was trying to grab Stark and pull her through, and it was like bending, and the door was about to close. I was like, is he going to get her halfway through and she's going to get cut in half?
I also wondered that, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that kind of had me on the edge of my seat.
And really, maybe it's just because I haven't watched enough Sam Neill movies, but I wasn't expecting Sam Neill to turn out to be the villain, for lack of a better word. He's not really the villain, but he is the villain, if that makes sense.
Well, so on that note, you bring up a good point. He was extremely eager to get on that ship, right? Mm-hmm. Like when they first docked, and you know, Lawrence Fishburne as the military captain of the whatever the other ship, the Lewis and Clark, he's like, nope, we've got to go do our sweep. You are staying here, you're the scientist, etc. And by the way, that in itself is kind of strange that like the lead scientist guy came with him instead of like, you know, it being an entirely military search and rescue crew. But he was like, I have to get on there. I have to be there. Also, in the very beginning, like the opening of the movie, he's already having visions, mm-hmm. and he's never been there. So that's one of those things that I was wondering, like, if we got that other 30 minutes of the movie, is there more to his character where like he was a villain of sorts, or he was already somehow possessed or something? Like, I feel like there's a missing piece of the puzzle there. And I was not sure by the end if like, was he possessed or was he a bad guy all along?
So most of the footage is lost. There's a little bit of footage that still remains that they found on like a VHS tape or something like that. And one of those is an introductory scene that probably would have been cut anyway, just because it repeats information that we're told later in the movie. But Sam Neill basically goes into a meeting with like the top brass, and where they tell him, hey, we found the Event Horizon, we're going to send a team out. And he's like, no, I need to be on that crew. And they basically keep telling him like, no, you don't. That's not your job. And he basically convinces them by saying something like, I'm the only one who knows how this works. I'm the only one who can tell you like what went wrong, something like that. And he's basically very insistent that he go on it.
Interesting. See, like, I feel like that actually would have been kind of relevant, like, because I definitely had that thought near the beginning of the movie and even wrote it down on my notes, like, why is this guy here?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the missing 30 minutes. And basically, another Paramount movie called Titanic got its release date moved from mid-summer 1997 to later in the year, to give presumably James Cameron more time or something like that. That meant something had to fill its slot, and this is the movie they chose. So normally you get around 10 weeks or so after you finish filming a movie to edit it together and make a cut that you like, and then you can share with people. Because they were suddenly under this crunch schedule, they got 4 weeks to edit this thing together instead of 10. And then they showed it to, I think it was like execs and maybe like a test audience. And supposedly like, the execs hadn't really been paying attention to what Paul Anderson had been doing because he was over in England shooting there in America. And apparently when he screened like the rough cut for them, they were like sort of appalled. Supposedly one of them said something to the effect of, we're the studio that makes Star Trek films. We can't have this. To which Paul Anderson was like, why would this have any influence on Star Trek? Like, he was really confused by that point. But so they went through, and I think they also showed that to like a small test audience, and they responded rather negatively to it. Like, they said it was pretty slow and stuff like that. So they then had 1 week to cut it down, and they cut it down like to about what we see now, showed it to another test audience, and that test audience responded better, but they hated the ending, because in the second edit they had changed the ending from being Weir versus Miller to being that burning guy versus Miller, like to make it more Miller focused. And the audience reaction was basically, what happened to that Weir guy?
He went out into space.
Sucked out the window.
Right. So the third cut, they then basically was the same as the second one, but they changed the ending back to the original ending of Weir versus Miller at the end, and then left it like that. But they only had like a week to do that. So this was basically a very compressed, accelerated editing process, and they never really got the chance to stop and think, okay, is this actually what we want to do? does this make sense? And I think that's why sometimes this movie does have that disjointed feel of like unclear why motivations are happening. Or like for me, I think what I really noticed was there's the moment where Sam Neill is in the drive room. He has like the vision and he gouges his own eyes out.
Yeah.
And then immediately the next scene, you find out he's already planted a bomb on the Lewis and Clark. And you're like, well, wait, what just happened here?
Yeah, I definitely, it felt to me hastily edited.
By the way, I'm getting most of this information from the Shout Factory Blu-ray that I bought off eBay and watched some of the special features. So,
and of course, you know, meanwhile, you have the studio who made the 17-hour-long Titanic sitting there going, we can't have a 130-minute movie. That's too long.
Well, to be fair, I think part of that was gore. I think they were like, this is an excessively gory film. And a couple of the scenes that do survive, like, they are much more gore intensive. Like, you see Jason Isaacs' character after he's been, like, vivisected and flayed out or whatever. Like, you get a little more close-ups of, like, his intestines on the table with his, like, body reflected in the mirror of surface. By the way, they said the entire reason that the medical bay couches are mirrored was so they could have that shot. And then they ended up not using it. The hell sequence is a little more graphic and goes on a bit more. It's a little more intense. And then the scene that I actually kind of felt sad that they cut because it was so cool and weird is when the tank fills up with blood and then breaks out over Stark and then like she like falls down the ladder and stuff. There's a scene afterwards where Sam Neill is naked and crawling down the ladder head first. And it's really covered in blood and it's really cool and weird looking. And I kind of wish they'd kept it.
That would have been creepy.
Yeah, but all that is to say that a lot of stuff that they cut was gore. And then again, the general reaction, not just from the studio execs, but also from, I think, the first test audience was just that the movie was moving a little too slowly. But the problem was basically Paul Anderson said that they went too far to the other extreme in order to deal with that because they had no time to stop and think.
Mm. That makes sense. Going back to Sam Neill there at the end again, once he becomes possessed, like fully, I guess, he also seems to suddenly have like super strength, like he's picking people up by the throat and throwing them around the room and everything. And before that, everything was like psychological, right? Like people are seeing visions. They're seeing, you know, it feels very real, but they're like, they're seeing visions of their fears, of their regrets, of all these, you know, their mistakes in the past, all these things. And then suddenly he's like Superman with like, you know, picking people up and throwing them around. Fast forward further, he gets sucked out the window and thrown into space, but then he's back in the gravity drive room. And it's not just a vision because he's like throwing Lawrence Fishburne around. So
I have thoughts, but I want to see if anyone else wants to.
Okay. There's a throwaway line for why he's back in the engine room, like the ship resurrected him. And it sounds like that scene that was cut. If I remember correctly, the blood pouring everywhere was after Sam Neill got sucked out of the window. So that would have pointed to him somehow being reincarnated through the blood pool, whatever the hell it was.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because that was another one, too. Like, everything's psychological, but, like, then suddenly everybody's covered in blood and there's blood everywhere. And when they get rescued at the very, very, very end, I noticed that, you know, whatever liquid window thing that was there that got filled with blood, like, that was still broken.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I mean, I think if we take the suggestion that Stark makes at one point that the ship is actually alive now and maybe is the vehicle of the devil, for lack of a better word, right? Because basically that seems to be more or less what's happening. I mean, okay, we can call it like an alternate hell-like dimension or something, but...
You know, if the instruments were to be trusted, well, you know, the life readings were dispersed throughout the ship.
Like, that's one of the things that I was wondering, actually, because, you know, you go back to the beginning when, what's his name, the first guy that splits off, Justin, I think it was.
Yeah, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he splits off, and as soon as he splits off, I'm like, oh, he's going to die.
Right? I had the same thought because he was the only one who had a tether attached to him, so, like, they had to do something with the tether, and right. Lo and behold. Right.
But he walks into the, he was the first one to walk into the gravity drive room, and he gets sucked through the portal. Okay. So like, it hasn't completely been activated. Nobody has like activated gravity drive, whatever, but there's clearly an open portal of some sort. So in my head, the like, after that point, the whole movie, I'm kind of thinking like, could there be things coming through that portal? And as Sam Neill is resurrected at the end, could there have been a brief shot where like he got sucked out the window, died, went to hell, and walked back through the portal as a like resurrected demon version of himself or something? I don't know.
I mean, the scarring on his body does look sort of ritualistic to an extent.
Yeah, right?
Like it's not just random marks.
Yeah, being decompressed in space wouldn't have done that.
Also, I think his eyes grew back, which being decompressed in space also does not do.
Well, are you sure?
It does the opposite.
Yeah, I feel real conflicted about the how long this movie is, because I kind of like it, and I think it moves along pretty briskly. But yeah, it does leave all those gaps. And one particular thing I noticed is that I guess the way to get through this experience is not to have a backstory that could be exploited by the devil.
Yeah, just have no trauma.
I mean, I guess DJ's only failing was that he wasn't fast enough to fight off the super strong Weir monster. Just like 10 seconds too late on grabbing that surgical saw and turning around.
Oh, yeah.
Can we talk, though, about how Cooper is a walking stereotype and love him so much? Like,
he is great.
What a bright spot in a pretty dark movie.
He's calm under pressure. He used his space suit to shoot himself very roughly aimed at Neptune and still managed to fly directly back to the ship.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He also delivered one of the most like perfectly veiled foreshadowing moments of like, I think any movie I've ever seen, where he made the ridiculously crude joke about, do you want something black inside you or whatever? And the rest of the movie ended up being about the dark being inside you.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
I did not pick up on that. No, it's awesome.
So I actually like noted down a few moments where I thought they did a really good job of like foreshadowing things in jokes and weird, just like things. I mean, there's the obvious one of like Miller leaving, you know, he left his crew member behind and then that came back to haunt him and he couldn't leave Stark behind. And then he like sacrificed himself and whatever. Yeah. And like talking about, have you ever seen fire in space? Then there was the huge firestorm as everything blew up right in front of Cooper and everybody. Like, I don't know. I thought they did a good job of that.
Also, he got the fixing the ship job done basically on schedule.
I had a question about that, though. Didn't they say it was the starboard side that ruptured? Because that sure looked like the port side they were fixing.
In space, everything's spinning and upside down.
Oh, you're right. Never mind.
Yeah, no, what's less believable is that he's a government worker and he got something done on time.
That well, never happened. Military.
Yeah, I work for the military. It doesn't happen.
Oh.
Everything's late.
Well, I mean, it did, you know, kind of have a leak that needed to be repaired again.
I always think it's funny when they have like a ticking clock, like we have 20 hours to do this, and like in the next scene we have 15 hours to do this. I'm like, what have you been doing for 5 hours? Nothing's happened.
Paperwork.
Yeah, I guess so. It's gonna pile up if we wait till the end.
No time. Actually, for reshoots, you know, just those cuts.
You know, that's why they got it done in time. It was because they almost couldn't have possibly been further away from Washington and its red tape. They just let the soldiers do what they need to do and they'll get it done.
I think I'm hearing that this is a movie where the audience brings something to their viewing experience.
No, a real Rorschach test of a movie.
Kind of along the same lines of the passage of time, it at least reminded me of when Smitty finds the bomb in you know, the Lewis and Clark. It says there's 5 seconds left, but directly under 5 seconds, I think it says disarm.
It's, yes. It's just like a big button.
Disarm it. He just closes his eyes.
Yeah, and it
just
did.
Accepts it. It's like, you could have given it a shot at least, you know?
Look for a sub menu. Maybe find some 3 dots to hit. See if there's something in there.
3 dots.
So, I don't know if this is an explanation, but in some of the deleted scenes that we have, like, they're incomplete, so visual effects aren't there. And so you see that, like, when, for instance, Miller is arming the bombs, like, he opens up and it's just a blank screen because they haven't put it in. So it could literally be just like Sean Pertwee being like, I don't know where my finger would even go.
Oh, sure.
I have no idea what this is supposed to say. They just told me I'm going to die.
Also, I don't know anything resembling the history of sci-fi, horror, eldritch, abomination, mashups, whatever you'd call this, but I guess this probably deserves a lot of credit for the Dead Space series, I assume.
I would think, yeah.
Yeah, which I adore, so mm-hmm. I give it all the credit in the world for spawning that.
I wonder if that might even be acknowledged.
It was in the Wikipedia page. I read that somewhere. Yeah. That, like, I mean, under its legacy or something.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
I mean, Dead Space 1 even has a bunch of stuff with the guy's wife, so, you know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yes. It according to Wikipedia, IGN even noted its impact on the Dead Space video game series.
Nope. Sam Neill's character was a wife guy. So what's the Isaac something?
Isaac. Was it Isaac Clark?
Oh, Isaac.
Was that the name of the character?
Oh, wow. Perfect. We got Jason Isaacs and the Lewis and Clark, you know, just mash those up a little bit, trim it a little bit for plausible deniability. Good enough. But anyway, you know, he has to be a wife guy, too. So,
okay. Dead Space creator Glenn Schofield wanted to make the most frightening horror game he could imagine, drawing inspiration from the video game Resident Evil 4 and films including Event Horizon and Solaris.
Resident Evil series, yeah. Also Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yes. That's on Wikipedia, but it's not sourced, so I guess I don't know for sure, but if that's real or not.
Well, I mean, it's on the internet. It must be real.
That's a fair point. So.
And yeah, noticing that, looking at his filmography, that he did Mortal Kombat before this, that's what makes the Prodigy song at the end make sense to me. I'm like, oh, of course.
Mortal Kombat, by the way, apparently the reason why he suddenly had clout to make this movie and why they more or less left him alone, because he'd already had a successful, from a money point of view, film.
I mean, I feel like we've been kind of hopping around, but is there anything in particular that people liked or wanted to talk about they haven't had a chance to talk about yet?
I wish I could remember all the great lines, so I've been going back through the movie with subtitles to try to find them. And one of them was just, you know, when Evil Weir says, where we're going, we won't need eyes to see. That was fantastic. Like, of course he said that.
I also say to Charlie once in a while, do you see? Do you see? And, yeah.
I really like the design of, well, just the ship in general, but the design of the Gravitron room or whatever it was called.
Yes, yeah.
The giant spiky room with the spinny ball. Like, the spinning ball drive thing is really freaking cool.
I could not help but think every time that all of the three aligned, I was like, oh shoot, you got gimbal lock. You're screwed on your readings there.
That might just be you, buddy.
Yeah, I guess nobody else is really the hardcore engineering there. Maybe.
Sorry.
Like you said, everyone gets something different out of this movie based on what they bring to it.
I agree. I thought that spinny ball drive thing was pretty cool. And I thought every time everything kind of lined up, like, it added a moment of tension of like, is something going to happen when it lines up again? But it, you know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
It was an appropriately menacing inanimate object. They did. Yes. I mean that very much as a compliment. I mean, they did a good job of making it a both science looking and scary looking thing.
Yes, I would 100% agree with that. Put very well.
Yeah, and that's like a big showpiece there too. But I like basically every section of the ship is pretty unique and interesting looking. like the med bay and like the main, like main center that they're always going to.
Central corridor?
The central corridor, yeah.
One of the interviews I watched on the Blu-ray said that the design cue for the Event Horizon was kind of like, make it look like a spaceship, but make it look gothic.
Hmm.
And so that's why there's like flying buttresses basically in like that central corridor and and like those weird random pillars happening in like the med bay area, stuff like that. It's a cool design, to be honest. Like great sets.
I just extremely you'll have to bleep this, but I loved the this ship.
That was like
like it's a horror movie, but he's very much in the understanding that, yeah, we're in a horror movie. Let's just blow it up. Okay, let's just get out of here. Blow the whole thing up.
I practically cheered at that point.
Somebody say him over all things.
Yeah. I did note that one thing where they went totally opposite of the expected tropes, the only three survivors were the first guy that split off that we all knew was going to die, actually didn't die. The supporting minority character and the hot girl. Those were the only three survivors were like the three tropes that absolutely there's no way those three characters live.
That's a good point, especially because for me, not having seen this movie, I did expect Lawrence Fishburne to make it through to the end. And it wasn't until like that last scene where I was like, oh, he's not coming back.
And like they kind of like sneakily turned that on its head. And those were the only three that made it. I don't know if that was a conscious decision, but it was definitely something I noticed.
I think it was. Paul Anderson did say something to the effect that he was pleased at how he was keeping audiences guessing on who was actually going to make it out of this alive.
Well, my hat's off to that, because I thought that was really good.
What did everybody think about the ending? I mean, it had been established that not only are people seeing things, but particularly while they're in hypersleep. Did you like the ending or not?
No, I guess. I didn't love that last little clip. It was fine, but maybe just see them getting back. I don't know. I wanted something that concluded the movie just a little bit better for me, I guess, if that makes sense.
I watched that scene and I went, oh, hey, that guy that's rescuing them was on Doctor Who. He played Sergeant Zabinia in Battlefield. I'm a bad viewer, I'm sorry. But a great Doctor Who fan.
I just thought it was a very kind of heavy-handed setup for a potential sequel, which obviously never came to be, but like it to me seemed very like...
So they were talking about it for a while before Paul Anderson kind of went, this probably is a movie that doesn't need a sequel. So then obviously Amazon said, well, are you sure about that? And so supposedly for a while they've been trying to put together like a TV show.
Did, speaking of sequel bait, did the back half of the ship explode or did it? I remember there was like a lightning effect. Like, did it go to hell? Is that?
It went into that wormhole hell and
Neptune. He activated the drive.
That's a bummer. So Lawrence Fishburne could come back in the TV show.
Yeah,
he could. Well, they all could. We already saw how they resurrected Sam Neill. They could resurrect anybody.
True.
No.
Who's not actively in a show right now?
Well, let's see. Sean Pertwee finished Gotham, so I guess he's available. I have no idea what Jolie Richardson's doing these days.
King Ralph 2.
That makes sense. I learned she's Vanessa Redgrave's daughter, by the way. I found that scrolling through Wikipedia. I was like, oh, cool.
Huh. Yeah, I just brought up the ending because I didn't like it. Like, I didn't think they should have had the fake out. I think she just should have, like, Sam Neill just should have got her. I think that's the ending. Like, for a horror ending.
Like, close up on Sam Neill's, like, you know, bloody face, just, and then cut to credits.
So,
like,
yeah. So you would prefer, you would prefer that they die rather than that they have lifelong trauma.
Probably be going to hell, so I don't know. I don't know if you just die in this case. Do the people who died the ship, are they in hell?
Well, yeah, I think
depends.
So.
Were they on the?
Did they do bad things? Yeah.
No, yeah, I just meant in the greater sense, like Kevin's talking about. I didn't.
Well, the ones that were in the gravity drive room, obviously. I mean, they physically ended up there.
Right.
All right. So, yeah, that's Event Horizon. Carr, what'd you think of our discussion? Did we miss the point?
No, this was great.
Are you happy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all got into the right spirit of the film, which it should be intended, which is like, yeah, it's pretty silly.
It is silly. It's, like, it's on the edge of almost being campy, but it's like enough gore and everything. I don't know.
It's, right, yeah, it's a good balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's, people ends are up taking it way. Just seriously enough.
Yeah.
I
do love the overall concept of, like, they build this thing to warp drive through the universe, but instead of popping out in some other part of the universe, it ends up in hell. Like, yeah. That seems like when you really zoom out and look at it overall, like, that seems like a very interesting sci-fi horror mashup idea.
Sorry to keep reporting things I saw on the Blu-ray, but apparently one of the things the studio execs wanted was more definitiveness about whether or not they were in hell. Because they were like, well, because the filmmakers were like, well, you know, we're just kind of leaving it vague. And the studio execs were like, no, are they in hell? Like, show us if they're in hell. Is this really hell? Is that the devil?
If you could show us hell.
If you could have Sam Neill hold a pitchfork, that'd be very helpful for us.
So those of us who hadn't seen the movie before, did we enjoy it? Would we recommend it to others? Would we watch it again?
I don't know that I have a strong need to watch it again, but like the right person, I'd probably recommend it if they were looking for this, roughly.
You want movies
because you liked Event Horizon, we recommend
Let me suggest. Oh, but it was entertaining. I do not regret having watched it, I guess, is my verdict for the film.
Better than Fantastic Planet. Got it.
All right.
Ugh, so weird. Gore I can handle. Whatever Fantastic Planet was just not that.
So I'm just imagining Kevin's on the spaceship and this is what Samuel shows him. It's Fantastic Planet. No. Send me out the airlock.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of with Kevin. I enjoyed the movie. I don't know that I would recommend it to everybody, but for those people that I think are on the sort of wavelength that this is operating on, like they like sci-fi, they like horror, that kind of thing, then I think this is a pretty easy recommend for that. If they haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'm right there with both of you. I enjoyed it mostly. I don't regret watching it by any means. I actually, if they did somehow find all the lost footage and came out with the full length director's cut, I would definitely like want to watch it.
And just one thing to add is that I definitely enjoyed this movie a lot more than a similar movie called Sunshine from 2007.
Oh, you didn't like that one?
I think half the people in that movie are idiots.
Yeah.
And I did not feel like these people were idiots, and I appreciated that.
Hmm.
Also, the ending of Sunshine is very weird. Like, this movie goes to hell, and Sunshine is weirder somehow.
I feel like if I had to choose a movie that this most reminds me of, I'd probably go with Deep Blue Sea.
Hmm.
He's not going to explain that. He's just going to
be... Why? Because it's...
Well, you know, it's from roughly the same era, so just in terms of... how movies were made, it feels somewhat similar. I mean, they both hit, you know, the main tropes of science has gone too far, and you know, we need to stop this awful thing from getting worse.
But this one didn't have LL Cool J.
It did not. It also did not have Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L.L. Cool J. Jackson.
Ladies love Cool Jackson.
That was the one where they were doing the Alzheimer research, right? And they...
Yeah.
Yeah. And the sharks became super smart. And that one got a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. And what did...
This is...
35-ish.
I was surprised at how low the Rotten Tomatoes
were. I was a little surprised as well.
I was definitely surprised. I thought it was better than 35%.
Could be contemporary reviews at the time, right? People may not have appreciated it.
I guess I can see that.
Well, and I kind of wonder, too, if seeing that first trailer, if you go back and watch it, it does look a lot more like it should just be more straight sci-fi-y instead of like more horror. So if you're going in expecting sci-fi, like straight sci-fi, and it's like horror, I would give it a bad review too.
So good point. Is the difference in 2024, there...
Variety named Event Horizon as the 94th best horror film of all time.
But not the 94th best sci-fi movie.
Well, that wasn't the list they were making. So,
so in terms of like science fiction-y, does that just mean that there's not much technobabble? And in fact, the part where we do get some technobabble, the other crew members are basically just like, shut up, nerd.
Well, I
speak
think, like,
English.
Instead of like the main scariness is like hell, like it would be more like an alien, like something else that's not so
terrestrial, for yes, lack of like, better. Yeah. But yeah, a bit of physical, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also love, Doug, that scene you're talking about where they're like, he's like, you wouldn't understand. They're like, try us. And then he starts explaining. They're like, shut that's up. Like, yeah. You don't nerd. Talk any sense.
He was nerd.
It's a trap.
For what it's worth, this 100 best horror films thing came out like 3 days ago. So I assume it's a Halloween thing as opposed to Variety making a bunch of 100 best lists.
What's number one?
Sharknado? Texas Chainsaw.
The remake or the original?
Original.
1974, yeah, the original. Does anyone else have any closing thoughts they want to say about Event Horizon? Other than, I think it didn't show up in the recording because it was pre-roll, but I would just like to officially state for the record that I was confused by the choice of Prodigy song for the end credits. It felt totally inconsistent.
Had a sweet beat, though.
I found no such thing. I thought it was the perfect. That's my on the record opinion.
All right.
I do want to know the opinion of Kara, who selected this movie. Like, what is your overall take on the movie? Because I can't tell if you like it or dislike it, and just thought that, hey, it's Halloween, it's October, let's do this one.
I do like it. There's
Charlie at one point said it was your favorite movie of all time, so
Charlie. No, it's fun. It's like a fun movie for me. It's like claustrophobic enough, like being in space. The hell scenes are pretty freaky, but then there's like the really kind of campy fun lines in there. It's just kind of like a movie that doesn't quite know where it's supposed to be. I think if you go in and think about it critically, it's not a very good movie, but if you kind of not think about it, like just enjoy the ride, then
yeah,
it's a fun
it's got
movie.
A good vibe.
Yeah, it's a fun movie.
I feel like it combined all my favorite movie types, you know, like kind of some 90s action cheesiness, but like gritty sci-fi horror, kind of like Alien, and then sort of more just classic horror gore type stuff too, like all into one.
I like how it taught us to not trust science.
I mean, just look at that room. It's an evil room. It's doing evil things.
That's right. Science. I needed Johnny Ive to go in there and design it, make it non-threatening. Well, thank you, Kara, for forcing us to watch. And no, it's the wrong way.
Sorry. Yeah, like as soon as October came, and I was like, "Oh, what sci-fi movie are you doing? You should do Event Horizon."
Like, I said, "If you come on the show, we'll do it."
I was like, all right.
Yeah, Charlie said that you were leaving him if we didn't do it. So.
I say a lot of things on this podcast.
Thank you for picking the movie for us. Sounds like we all enjoyed it on some level. And so, we appreciate it.
I would like to second Paul's statement earlier that this was on my list of things I was considering picking. So thank you, Kara, for saving me a pick.
Of course. Anytime.
All right. Now we need to choose the next one. And so since we're shuffling the names, I'm going to share my screen just so everyone knows no shenanigans are happening. Can everyone see the wheel?
Sure can. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's spin.
How come there's only five names?
Doug picked our last movie and obviously Kara's not involved.
Okay.
Oh, no, it's me.
Oh, wow.
No.
Adam.
Rigged.
Oh, no. I didn't think it was going to be me.
I was very relieved seeing it just slide past me there.
Let's spin again.
No, you know what? I'm just gonna shoot from the hip. Let's go back in time from Event Horizon. Let's go 70 years earlier, and let's watch the 1927 German science fiction silent film Metropolis.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Okay. How long is that?
2.5
hours. How long is the version you're gonna make us watch?
The complete Metropolis, or as complete as it is, I think is about 2.5 hours.
They're gonna say 9.5 minutes.
No.
That's all the film they could afford.
We did that for cinematic respect as a joke. I told Charlie that the movie we were watching was A Voyage to the Moon, which is the movie where the ship lands in the moon's eye from like 1902 or something like that.
Yeah, and it's only like 10 minutes long or whatever.
Exactly, right? Yeah. And somehow we got an hour podcast out of it.
And it was a great movie. I really liked it.
It turned into a good episode, but it was purely a joke initially. But yeah. So yeah, Metropolis next time. The nearly complete version.
Oh, I was like, is that the one that has the original score like re-performed or something like that?
Probably. It's a public domain movie now, so I think as long as you have the footage, whatever score you choose is probably less important.
Oh, so I should watch the one that's Air.
You should do that. Give us instructions on how to get the correct version.
I will. Jeez. What do you want? A movie that's been not cut up 1,000 different ways and restored just as many times?
Yes. One which, I would prefer a movie which has not had additional footage discovered in Brazil since I saw it last.
So this was the perfect movie then, Event Horizon, where all the extra footage is lost.
Yes, exactly.
All footage lost. So anyway, thanks everyone for joining us on Sci-Fi Shuffle here at the Gobesky Wallace Report. I'm Adam Gobesky.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Thanks to our four guests, we've got Cara Hulse.
Hi. Bye.
Paul Wilcox.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Vredevogue.
It's been a pleasure.
Doug Gobesky.
I enjoyed our trip to hell.
And Dan Hess.
Can't wait to come back.
That's five guests, isn't it?
I was going to say, I was counting along.
Yeah.
I think I might have said four at the start.
You did.
You said
four, but then you called the Cara special guest, so it wasn't sure if that was like its own classification.
Well, Cara remains a special guest.
Counting windows and being used to not counting Charlie's window. Oh, well. But I like your explanation, Kevin, because that's what I intended.
Of course.
Hey, thanks for coming along on that wacky adventure with us. You can see more of it on Facebook and Twitter.
And it says we have a website, www.gobeskywallacereport.com, with more zany antics. Is this really what you wanted me to say?
I think that's the best reading we're going to get, so.
Fun for the whole family, including Grandma.
And Grandpa.
Oh, it's down at the bottom. And Grandpa.
You always forget Grandpa. Let's do it again.
And then The Exorcist, Psycho, Jaws, Rosemary's Baby, Night of the Living Dead, Audition, the Mickey film, I think. The original Frankenstein, Salo, or The 120 Days of Sodom. And then Carrie rounds out the top 10.
The original or the Chloe Grace?
The original. The Sissy Spacek one.
Wait, hold up. You have to ask for the original. Did anyone ask about, was it the original for Psycho?
It's not the, was that Gus Van Sant who did that?
Yeah, Vince Vaughn.
The Shaft. Psycho, Shaft. Yeah.